Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to Deutsche Grammophon's international podcast series. I'm Sarah Willis, and I just love podcasting with the Yellow Label's star-studded cast of musicians. My guest today is Christian Löffler, a very successful and innovative electronic musician. He has just released an album with Deutsche Grammophon called Parallels, Shellac Reworks. He remixes 100-year-old Shellac classical recordings with his own music. But how exactly do you remix Beethoven and Bach? I can't wait to find out. Christian, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. And we were just saying how great it is to be able to do this in English as well. Thank you for that.
No problem. Thank you.
It's sometimes hard when you meet someone in a language to then change the language. Yeah. We just met in German.
Can be complicated, yeah.
But you've been practicing your English during these lockdown periods.
Re-practicing, yeah. I kind of lost it after I just stayed home, no touring. And then, yeah, you're there in this small village where I live. And nobody speaks English, of course. So my first interview after a few months was horrible. I was like, oh, I can't speak English anymore. But now I'm getting used to it again.
You're so good that you're on an international podcast. It's great to meet you. And I love to be a little bit out of my comfort zone, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm involved in the wonderful world of classical music. And because we work in the evenings as well, I don't really go clubbing that much, although mm-hmm. clubbing actually happens much later at night, doesn't it?
Yeah. It can be really late, yeah, that's for sure. And also for me, it's a different world. I mean, I started with club music or this clubbing thing, and then it was just kind of normal for me to, I don't know, play at 3 in the morning or 4 or even 5. And then I kind of started playing concerts and also mixing my music with a string quartet, and we played with an ensemble, and then started to play earlier, and I got used to it, and then coming back to the club life was kind of hard. But I like both worlds. It's very interesting. It's very different. And yeah, the clubbing thing is kind of... can be tiring sometimes.
I think we're all going to suffer from terrible jet lag feelings, all artists, when we go back to our normal life mm-hmm. that we had before the corona times. And we actually give concerts that finish at 10 o'clock at night and you start playing at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, since we haven't been playing many concerts, I'm asleep at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that's the same for me.
That's going to be a hard one for you, because you go from like 3 to 5.
That's for sure, yeah. That's going to be a really hard one. I hope I can focus on the more classical concert thing then.
That's a good idea. So tell me something. What exactly is a remix?
Actually, it's a special thing, because usually when I do remixes, you get files or recordings from the original piece, and then you can rearrange it, rework it, like changing the pitch and things like that, and add new music to it. So you make kind of a new original piece in a way. But for the Shellac recordings, for the Parallels project, it was different, because it was one track in all. So I had no string section or brass section separately. Everything was playing at the same time. So it was a very special project. And
you mean the piece, you had a fixed piece, like you got given a Shellac recording of Beethoven's Third Symphony Beethoven's Sixth Symphony.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, no separate stems, just one piece of music.
So you couldn't take things apart and remix them, because you didn't have different tracks? Because how would it have been recorded in those days?
Very interesting. I was doing some research about the recording situation and found many beautiful pictures from that time. I mean, it was in the 20s and 30s, and the concert halls looked very beautiful, but also the situation with the recording situation, and then these beautiful Shellac records. They are very heavy, and yeah, you can see on the sleeve, there's a lot, many notes on it. It's used, been in this studio and that studio. There's a lot of history going on, and I was very inspired from that.
For the listeners that aren't quite sure what we're talking about, the Deutsche Grammophon has this wonderful project. They're restoring Shellac recordings, so original recordings from, I think they started even earlier than the 20s. Mm-hmm. The Deutsche Grammophon has literally one of the oldest sound archives in the world. And a lot was, of course, damaged during the war and things like that. But they've got an incredible collection of wonderful things. And it's just being digitalized. That's a hard word to say on a podcast. Digitalized. You try that.
that. It's a hard one.
Yeah, it's a really hard one, yeah.
And that's where you came in. I mean, they have these wonderful recordings, so 1920s recordings of the Berlin Phil, the Staatskapelle Berlin, playing Beethoven, and you've taken the Thomaner Chor, singing Bach, and the Moldau. And
a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So did they just come to you and they say, here, have these recordings? How did this collaboration start?
I was very lucky because I just finished working on my album and I was in the studio preparing for the tour. And then they said, yeah, the Corona thing is on and we're never going to play the tour, not like planned. So I had a lot of time. And then there was the request from the Deutsche Grammophon asking me if I could maybe imagine reworking or remixing this material. And I was like, oh, wow, that's that's perfect timing. And I was checking the material. There was a lot of stuff, like, 40 pieces from 9 or 10 composers. And all these big names, and then you're like, oh, wow, oh, that's that's going to be difficult, and it is a tough one. I mean, this, it's Beethoven, so I mean, I make music, electronic music, just for fun, basically. And then you go out, play in a club, and you're kind of successful maybe, but you're in your world. You just, nobody judges you in a way, like when you touch Beethoven or something like that. So you had to have that in mind already. But then I was like, oh, it's really interesting and it's something else. And I mean, I just finished my album. So I was like, yeah, why not? I could give it a try and experiment and see what's happening. And also I was very lucky because Deutsche Grammophon was like, oh, you're free to do whatever you want. We trust you. We're happy that you
That can be good, but it can also be a pain.
I realized. And I was like, okay, wow. I was thinking about it a few days and then I was like, yeah, I want to give it a try. I want to do it. But I also felt when I went to bed, I felt like, oh, maybe it was not the best idea.
Well, it was impressive which pieces you chose. Now, you went through 40 or so different composers. And the first thing you always hear on these recordings is...
Yeah, there's a lot of noise going on.
They call it dirt in the groove. I love that. I love that. That's where the needle hits the groove of the record. Mm. And they couldn't clean all of it off, could they? Oh, here we go again. Digitalization.
I think they cleaned a lot, but there's still a lot going on.
But also, isn't that great? Isn't it? It's a wonderful
sound. I mean,
sound.
I'm always a fan of these things like patina or history. So I'm always looking for something like that. I'm a fan of analog photography. I'm also painting with oil and stuff. So I like old paintings. I like old things. So I was happy that it's there, actually. I mean... I even did some fake vinyl sounds when I started making music. So I was always looking for this kind of history thing. So I was happy that it was still there.
So how did you decide to use these pieces? And then the second question, which follows on from that, why these parts? Because you've chosen actually not the happy, joyful, dancing Beethoven parts. You've chosen more the sort of very, I mean, your music is described as nostalgic a lot, sometimes melancholic. And that's really what you've chosen here.
Yeah, that was the big challenge in the beginning because how to find the right moments or parts. And I was there sitting in the studio for a few days and I was like, yeah, I mean, like I said, you have all these big names and very famous symphonies. And then you're like, oh, that's kind of overwhelming.
Did you know them before, most of the music?
Yeah, I'm not the very well-trained classical listener, I have to say.
Now you are.
Yeah, I got better.
You're coming, as soon as we do some concerts, you're coming to the Philharmonie for a live concert.
That's for sure, yeah, I'm very interested. I'm very curious. But then I was like, okay, I have to change my strategy. And I was like putting on headphones, closing my eyes. And yeah, I was putting on the music, just playing randomly, and I was listening carefully, and I was taking notes. I was starting to take notes of moments that kind of touched me, or where I had a feeling, okay, this speaks to me now, and there could be some space for me to add something, or this kind of opens a door for me. And yeah, I was taking notes, so it was kind of random. I was actually not looking who's the composer or what is the piece.
I was just listening to the
music, and it felt also, it was very interesting because it felt kind of timeless. At some point, I didn't even realize how old these recordings are. It felt like, yeah, it's just music.
you've chosen a lot of slow movements of the pieces, you know, like we just said before, like the pastoral, you've chosen the one. You're a very nature-loving person, aren't you?
Yeah.
And I love, you can hear the birds, you can hear the cuckoo in your pastoral remix. And that's so peaceful. And the fate also, you have the funebre and... Mm-hmm. Just, I really like the mixture, and I found it really suits also, although I didn't know anything about your style of music before I started to listen to this, it suits your style of music making. You said in an interview as well that you want to be respectful of the composers that you are remixing or collaborating with.
Yeah.
It's very important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's also coming from the sampling background, because when you make electronic music, you're always kind of, I mean, sampling is a big part of it. So sometimes you just take something from a TV show or from a movie or from another music piece, and then you just record it and you're kind of stealing it at some point, but then you're changing it so much that you can't really hear the original piece anymore. But here I wanted to take the originals and I wanted to show it to people, maybe also to my fans or audience, people that are listening to my music, and show them the beauty of the original pieces so that maybe they are interested afterwards and I want to hear the original. I want to see how it sounds
exactly
like.
That's exactly what I want to hear. That's fantastic.
So that's why I was always making space for the original, maybe in the beginning or even in the Moldau rework. I have a part in the middle where only the original shellac recording is playing. So I wanted to make space for it, yeah.
Do you think this would work in a club?
I think so, yeah. I mean, we played it once in Bonn at the Beethoven House for the
Not quite
Yellow
a
Lounge.
Club, though. Ah, there was
Not
the
a
Yellow
club,
Lounge, yeah.
But I had the feeling when we played it live, it felt like with the moments where a beat is coming in, it felt like, that could really work. I mean, it's different, though, but there's definitely space for change it more, push it more in a clubby direction. And yeah, definitely. I want to try it out.
Absolutely. You tell me when, unless it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not sure. We have rehearsal at 10, always. So in club, I have something I just wanted to ask you, because often you see you're not a DJ. You don't...
I'm not playing records in a way.
No, you don't play the records. Yeah, yeah. You create your own sounds. And you have to read the audience, don't you? And you have to sort of give them space to breathe and whip them up into a crazy mass of whatever. Conductors have to do that sort of thing, except they have a certain form that they know which music, you know, they're conducting. Would you say that what you do is similar to conducting on a night in a club?
It's pretty similar when you say it like that, because I also have my repertoire. I have my music. I have a few albums and singles, so I can play music from that and then also improvise and make transitions and change the mood and stuff like that. So,
but you have to read the mood before you change
the mood. It's about the feeling with the audience, like it's giving forth and back, and the best is if you can read them and if they are giving something back. So if you kind of feel the unity in a way, that's the best thing about it.
How do you know if you're successful or not on the night? Do you go away from some thinking, I go away from concerts thinking, I could have done that better and I should have done that better?
Very difficult, because I always have moments like that could have been better, or that was like a horrible mistake. But then you speak with people afterwards and nobody actually realized. And then they say, that was the best show. And it felt like, that was definitely much better once before. So it's always a very strange thing. I don't know. You never really get it. Sometimes you feel very good and then afterwards, was not the best show. But usually I think we are, the musician is always the biggest critic of yourself.
It can ruin our lives if you have a bad concert. You just think the world has ended sometimes, or especially on the horn, you know, it's such a dangerous instrument. You can ruin a concert with one note. And I always just feel like, and I was wondering if club musicians felt the same, because everyone seems to be having a great time.
Yeah, I mean, I had horrible accidents with computers turning off or equipment falling off the stage and then no music, or power turning off. I mean, that was not my fault, but standing in the dark for 5 minutes with full of people, the room. Yeah, this can be very stressful.
Oh, no. Classical music is held still on a bit of a pedestal, and that's exactly what people like me are working to get it down from there and to get especially younger audience interested. And that's why I'm so happy and enthusiastic about these sort of projects. Mm. How would you say your audience has reacted to your Parallels album? Have people said, that's really nice music. Oh, I've never heard that. Or what has been your feedback?
I'm very happy, and I'm checking the internet, all the platforms every day now since it's out, and I'm very happy about the feedback. Also, I'm getting reactions from people that were not my audience before.
Like me.
Yeah, and that makes me very happy, because if you're opening your world to a different world, and that's really good. But also from my regular fans, I get only positive feedback, and I was a bit stressed about it before, because I was not sure. Like I said, you're making your music, and kind of people were kind of knew my music, what I'm doing,
they
how
were
it
your
sounds.
Fans. Yeah, they liked right. Your stuff.
So then I was trying to go in a little bit different direction. I mean, it's still my mood, but then it's more ambient maybe, or soundtrackish in a way also. So I was very excited for that, but just good or positive reactions. So I'm very happy.
If anyone's listening who's never heard these symphonies or these classical pieces live, they are more than welcome to come to a live concert.
Yeah.
Because you really have to experience, it's like club music, you have to experience it live.
It's a different thing, yeah, for sure.
Rather than just sitting at home listening to it. And it's the same with live concerts.
Yeah, like I said, for the first show we played it in Bonn, it was a different thing. So, I mean, it was just a string quartet, but it sounds so good, so different. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, well, let's hope we can all get back to live music very, very soon. So your track list, do you have a favorite? Or, I mean, I listen to them all quite a few times, actually, because for me, it's also, as a classic musician, sometimes quite strange for my ear to be hearing a piece I know so well, and then suddenly a chord, like even just the beginning of the Funebre on the album. You know, you hear the Beethoven 3, and all of a sudden the chord changed. I was like, no, wait a minute, that's not how it goes.
Yeah,
and that was the longest track on the album. That goes about 13 minutes or something.
Yeah,
so you can really get into the space there. The others are shorter. Can you explain the tracks, and do you have favorites? And
it's also a thing I have when I finish a work, I kind of put it away and don't listen to it. So with the interviews coming in, I was like, just rediscovering the music again. I just had an interview few days ago, and I was listening to Freiheit again, because he was playing it, and I was like, okay, that's actually maybe my favorite, because I don't know, it's kind of slow, and then it's low key in a way, it's not so, it's not very focused, it's kind of floating, but I like it, and it's changing all the time. Also, Fate is really good.
Favorites is really mean to ask. I hate it when people ask me what's my favorite piece. So I'm sorry about that. So it's my interviewer mode.
Actually, I hate listening to my music, and I never do it, to be honest. It's really true. And
I always think it could be done. If I listen to my playing, I think, I could have done that better, and I could have done that better. It's frustrating.
Yeah, and you're working for months on it, and then you're kind of tired of it. But it's great after years to rediscover it.
Google Arts and Culture have also put it together with these videos, this beautiful visual aspect of it. Although I was imagining in a club, you wouldn't really want videos going at the same time, because people usually have their eyes closed and are in their bodies rather than the video. So how did this idea come to put the visuals onto the tracks?
That's also maybe because I'm also working as a visual artist. I'm painting and taking photographs. And I always do my artworks on my own. So I always have this strong visual concept on my mind somehow. Like I said, I did some research on the recording situation and also off the concert hall at that time. And I found many beautiful pictures. And that was also the moment when I was like, I want to take some photos at the Staatsoper in Berlin. Just to, it looks really beautiful. I think even backstage or in the different rooms or in the hallway, there's some energy, a lot of energy going on from the concerts, from the shows, from the musicians, from the audience. And that's so much insight you can show with a quiet photo. So I wanted to have this as a part of the project.
It's great. But then for something like Dear Jehovah, you have a whole story going on. There's some, the video.
For the video,
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very happy about it, because it's a friend from Chile. He did the video, and he did one music video for me before. And I was speaking with him about the project, and he was like, we had something more floating on our mind, but then we were like, okay, maybe it would be nice to have a contrast, like a short movie thing, something you wouldn't maybe imagine.
I absolutely did not imagine that at all. Really, it was a big surprise.
Yeah, and when I watched it for the first time, like a short snippet, I was like, "Oh, okay. Is this? I actually like it. I enjoy it. But people think about it? But yeah, it works very well together, actually."
Yeah.
Even if it's a strong contrast.
Contrasts are good.
Yeah.
I mean, Beethoven and electronic music, I think he would have liked it. Don't know if he would have been able to hear it that well.
Yeah.
But he definitely would have liked it. I actually gave myself a challenge because usually at the end of our podcast, we've had this thing called the horn challenge where you would have, in healthier times, pre-COVID, I would have made you play my horn and just to see what comes out. And the worse you are, the more we loved it. Of course, we can't do that these days. And so I've been thinking up different challenges. And instead of challenging you, you actually gave me a challenge yourself without knowing it. I found the Rework app.
Oh, yeah.
And you and Deutsche Grammophon have this Rework app where we, your audience and your fans, can rework a tiny bit of the Moldau.
Right, yeah.
So I did that. I would love to play it to you.
Yeah,
so
sure.
If the listeners want to have a go, where can they find this?
It's on my homepage. And you find this little app and you can, like I said, rework the Moldau.
And what should we pay attention to when we're doing this? Maybe I've done it completely wrong, but I'd like to show you.
I'm always like, do whatever you want. It's art. So just go for it.
Okay, well, I'm now going to play it for you. So I'm showing this to Christian now on my laptop. It says Sarah W. At Christian Loeffler Parallels Rework It web app. What a fantastic idea this is, because I'm all for interaction with the fans and friends, and I'd never done anything like this before in my life. So if I may, I'd like to play it to you, and then I would like your professional opinion.
Of course.
Okay, here we go. So I was actually quite nervous showing that to you, and you were looking at the buttons that I'd pressed or sort of pushed up and down. What do you think?
It's different, but it works. I was really curious looking at it, and the picture looks different. If you change the sliders or the mixers, the picture changes also. So I was like, I never saw it like this. So I was curious how it sounds.
It's really very cool. The visuals change if you change the sliders.
Right, yeah.
So I only realized that actually once I'd finished it, I was too busy concentrating on it. So you can see what I've done. I've actually put the orchestra right up because that's what I love
the
to
main
hear.
Part,
but I left the beats in there. What else have I done? I can't really.
I was happy that you left the beats inside.
Of course. I felt very cool. So that was my challenge, and you can save it, and I even got my own album cover with my name on it.
That's the name, right?
So I can really recommend that, and that was my challenge to myself, so I hope I passed.
And you can share it actually with me, and I'm going to share it on Instagram, for example.
Oh, wonderful.
So maybe we should do that.
We will do that immediately. Dear listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I have. It's been fantastic learning about a completely different new music world for me, but many of you who are listening know about this music world already. I can only congratulate you, Christian, for being so brave and to put the worlds together. And I hope you're going to do a lot more of it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We'll see you next time on the Deutsche Grammophon International Podcast Series. I'm Sarah Willis, and thank you for joining us.